So, hello everyone. Welcome to episode 109 of Just Press Start. Wow. I don't know why. Every time it's over 100, it just kind of keeps blowing my mind. But anyway, so we're going to have a little bit of a shakeup this evening. Dave is not with us tonight. He's got some personal things he needs to take care of. But sort of replacing Dave is the former person that Dave replaced for a while. Ian, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thanks. I mean, it has been about a week, so it seems odd that things have changed quite so dramatically, but okay, yeah, good to be back.
Well, when you return, class returns to the show.
This is something, I don't know where you've got this from. It's like having a British accent makes me like the go-to guy with class, but if you actually met me, you'd realize it's as far off a description as you could.
So like, don't wear an ascot and know which fork goes with which thing?
Well, I could probably work out the forks, because if they're set on the table already, you know, it's easy. You just you know which one comes next, because they're all in sequence. But
really?
Yeah, generally.
I thought you just use the same fork for everything.
Well, depends how fancy a dinner is.
See? Once again, touch of class. That's why we have Finners here, folks.
Right, there you go. I'm happy to play up that role, yeah.
And that other voice you heard, as always, our producer, Luke. Luke, well, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Wow. I don't know what that was, but all right, don't ever say it like that again.
What? I just said hi, everybody.
And he did it again.
It's because you told me not to.
Uh-huh.
Dude, I am doing everything just to spite people this evening, so...
And in that spirit of cooperation...
I'm just having one of those days today. So if by chance you're listening to the podcast, people at home, and you can't hear Jeff's voice, you know why.
It's because Luke muted him. That's it. That's nuts. Just edited clean out of the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. Only two people on the Just Press. Anyway,
we
have...
I'm seeing three. What the hell's wrong with them? Anyway.
We have a lot of stuff to go over this evening. So... why don't we just start right here? Well, since it came out today anyway, we might as well talk about the incredibly problematic launch, would we say, for COD Blops 2?
It wasn't really problematic. It's just one minor issue, you know.
The minor issue being apparently that if you order the PC version, you might get two games for the price of one?
No. You don't get two games. You get half of one game and half of another.
Right.
Both so, completely unplayable.
Yes.
Probably for various reasons. So what we're talking about is, according to many articles now and a YouTube video, so, you know, if you see it on YouTube, it's got to be accurate.
Sorry. It's one of them days today, I'm telling you.
apparently, PC versions of Call of Duty Black Ops 2, COD Blops 2, have been, disc 2 has been accidentally replaced by a disc that contains Mass Effect 2 data. Now, is it labeled a Mass Effect disc, do we know, or is it just the wrong data on a
I think it's the wrong data on the disc. I think it's actually labeled as a Black Ops 2 disc, and then people go to put it in, and it's like, that's not a Black Ops 2 disc, please put it in the Black Ops 2 disc, and then when people go to research it, it comes up as Mass Effect or something like
now,
that.
Now, at least fortunately, if you're playing the PC version, it's a Steam install anyway, so you can always download Disc 2. There have been a lot of funny comments, like, oh, at least you got a better game for Disc 2, and...
I find it more amusing that it's not just... it is Mass Effect, which is an EA game, and Call of Duty is an Activision game. But the funnier part is it's not the current Mass Effect. Like, if it were Mass Effect 3, it'd be like, oh, all right, that's kind of a current game. But how do you get CODBL or BO, whatever, however the hell you
Yeah.
Can. See, it's harder than you think, isn't it?
CODBO2 mixed up with ME2. I'm just curious.
Well, it's
same graphical prowess.
Hmm.
Same what?
Graphical, like, prowess and...
Oh.
Mm.
Yes, because that's... Mass Effect looks like Call of Duty now.
Well, there are people who said that the second game was kind of dumbed down, so yeah, there was a lot more shooting. In Mass Effect 2.
I don't know if that was an actual zing towards people that play Call of Duty, but if it was, well played, sir.
No, see, I'm going to wind up buying a copy for my father because he will want to play it. Because
he doesn't know any better.
Well, you know.
Because you refuse to teach him, Jeff.
No, that's not true. Up until he's going through Just Cause 2 withdrawal right now, after having reduced every single human on Panao to a bullet-ridden body.
Okay.
So he's been playing Just Cause 2 for about 6 months straight now.
Okay.
So he does know that better games than Call of Duty type games exist, and yet he persists. He actually spoke to me today about wanting to buy a Wii U, and I will not have that, so...
I think you should let him buy one.
No, God no, because they don't want me to play it.
Yeah, so?
That's not happening.
I think there's some real innovative stuff there with the Wii U, I really do. Come on, Mario? Again? Zelda? Again?
But this time you can play it on a little crappy screen, too.
A little crappy screen while your wife watches Brothers and Sisters. Or whatever other girly show she might watch.
I'm sorry, this did not mean to turn into Wii U bashing, so we'll move back to the topic at hand. So, like Luke said, I don't understand how a mistake like that could get made. However, according to GameSpot, and I was not able to confirm this today because I went to go pick up my copy of Lego Lord of the Rings for Xbox 360, but the line of COD bloppers was so long that I was not going to stand there listening to them all going, speaking in leet while they're all standing in line saying how they were going to pwn one another. So I left.
Wait a minute. There was still a line of people when you showed up?
At 2:30 this afternoon, I went over. I took a break from work and I went over to go get my copy of Lego Lord of the Rings, and the line was still to the door. So the store was filled with little COD bloppers, and there was just, no, was not going to stand there and deal with that nonsense. But anyway.
I had to deal with a student in my class that fell asleep because he was at the midnight launch. I was like, seriously?
That is why corporal punishment, should be allowed in school still.
Why? Because he was out until midnight, or that it was for Call of Duty?
Either one.
Out of interest, has either of you ever bothered with like a midnight launch?
Yes.
What game and just why? I don't understand it.
I did it for Gears of War 2.
And don't you wish you hadn't?
And man, did I totally regret it. He's not lying there. I totally regret it. Well,
remember that night, too.
I regret parts of it. I don't regret all of it.
He regrets purchasing the game and the people he was there with, but otherwise...
No, I actually don't regret purchasing the game. That's not one of the regrets. I don't regret being there to pick up the game at midnight, because when I did get home, my friend that... was going to be playing with me. He was down in North Carolina. His copy was there. My copy was there, and we jumped on and we started playing right away, which was cool. And I did take off the next day from work as well. That was one of the few instances that I actually have done that as well.
All right, I've never done a midnight release, but I most certainly have taken the day off from work to play a game. I will admit that.
But, yeah, no, it was – the not worth it part was actually standing there in line with some of those people. Oh, my God.
Right.
And my friend's experience down in North Carolina was completely different than mine here in New York. It just completely different. Because his GameStop was actually, you know, really cool, unlike the one that I had to go to. Which I don't understand how Jeff has such a great GameStop, and the GameStop that I'm stuck going to, well, was stuck going to, was so crappy. Well,
it was a great GameStop, but they have switched managers. So the other day I was attacked by Captain Upsell, and I thought I was going to have to start throwing out bodies. I went to purchase – I purchased a game for myself, and I purchased a Christmas present for my dad. And he tried to upsell me, I think, every single thing in the store. Strategy. Well, first he wanted to know if I wanted season passes for things, and I said no, and that upset him. And he's like, well, do you want strategy guides? And I said no. And he's like, what are you going to do, Google it? And I was like, I'm good, thanks. Well, what about pre-orders? Do you want it? No, will you just let me have my damn games, please? So I'm kind of dreading going over tomorrow to go pick up my Lego Lord of the Rings, getting back to what I was bringing up before, because one, I'm going to have to deal with that guy. And the other thing is that there's a good chance that I'm going to open the box and find a demo of Lego Lord of the Rings rather than the full retail game, because that's another disc mishap that is occurring right now. So my question then is, what the hell is going on at the disc stamping place?
Where you know what I'm thinking?
What's that?
I'm thinking this is the same factory that took care of the Call of Duty things. And all I'm going to say is that this CD factory, wherever it may be in the world, is in some deep dog doo-doo because they just lost millions of dollars of contracts.
Yeah, but they probably pay their people like 4 cents a day. So, you know, it won't hurt them too badly, sadly. But, that seems like a pretty... The wrong information on the disc thing seems bad enough, but actually swapping out demos for full retail when it says quite clearly on it, demo.
Hey.
That just seems really, 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 you know, I work in quality, so I'm thinking, you know, doing some inspections, you know, that's just a thing. Just throwing that out there.
I'm going to look like such the bad guy right here, but when English isn't your first language.
Well, I mean, that is very true. That is very true, but... You know, that's why you need somebody who is familiar to go through and, you know.
Those Cantonese symbols and all.
That's probably very true, and I don't think that makes you a bad guy. I think that's definitely an issue. But anyway, so getting back, Ian, so I'm guessing you have never done the midnight release thing either?
No. I do not see the point. I've never wanted a game so much that I couldn't just chill out and wait a couple of days.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not worth lining up, surrounded by other people who the only link you have with them is, we both like this game. It's just not worth it.
Now, I did go to a midnight release of a movie one time. I did go see a Matrix movie at a midnight showing.
That's different.
I bet you were disappointed with that as well, weren't you?
Well,
unless it was the first one.
It was the second one. It was a good enough time that I don't feel like I totally... regret having gone. It was more fun for me because the people watching was funnier to me than whether or not the movie was as good. So, but yeah, the midnight release, I just don't, I want to be asleep. I don't want to be standing out there in the cold, especially this time of year in the cold with a bunch of people, like you said, that you have nothing in common with. If you had like 8 or 10 buddies who were going, I could see it might be kind of a, you know, we're out late at night. Kind of, but now, you know, if it were just me out there, I'd be like, this sucks. There's a long line. I'll come back.
You know, with the Gears of War 2 release, it was more, I was on the phone with my phone or on the phone with my friend. Wow. Anyway,
right in the English language as well, aren't we?
Yeah, I am.
That's how traumatic this was.
It was pretty traumatic.
It's hard for him to tell us about.
It's still not done, what we were talking about.
Show us on the doll the game touched you.
So anyway, I was on the phone with a friend of mine, and it was so funny because on his end, it sounded like there was a party going, and I could have sworn that it was Cliff Bleszinski in the background DJing, because you hear this guy talking, and it kind of sounded like him. But then come to find out, there was actually...
There were strippers. It was amazing.
No, well, he lives in Apex, which is right outside of... Apex, North Carolina, which is right outside of Cary, North Carolina, where the head office of Epic is. So, of course, the devs of Epic are out at the different GameStops that are around their office. And my friend ends up, you know, dev chilling. They were playing like our place that I was. They were doing a Gears of War 1 tournament. And it was like, oh, we can't do a Gears of War 2 tournament until midnight because that's when the game doesn't release. Meanwhile, down there, because all the devs of Epic are all hanging out, devs of Epic are popping in Gears of War 2 and goes, hey, let's play this early, you know? And here's my friend jamming on it like, oh, my God, this is the greatest time ever. And I'm sitting there between one guy that smells like he hasn't bathed since he was born and another guy that looks so gettified going, yeah, man. Training in all my games for this jam, even though I can't afford to buy myself food. You know, it was just like, wow, I can't believe I'm at this shit. It was that bad. So, it was just interesting, the contrasting. My friend having a great time and me, yay.
I think I ranked that up there with, you know, the people who camp out to watch a movie.
Oh, shush. Dude, when episode 7 releases, I see you in line with your son. I do. I see it.
Yeah, a week or two later, I'll take him to see it. Yeah, absolutely.
No. I'm talking the night that it releases. I see you out there all dressed up in your stuff.
What stuff's this?
Yeah, what stuff is that?
You know, all that crazy Jedi crap that you have.
What? Okay.
Dude, when are we making lightsabers?
I don't think that's ever happening.
Yeah, that's your fault.
Sorry. So anyway, since we've kind of...
I know, totally derailed stuff, I'm sorry.
That's all right. So, what should we go with next? Should we go with the thing that I'm slightly annoyed about, or the thing that we're really annoyed about?
Slightly annoyed, then really annoyed.
Okay, we'll work our way up the annoyance chain. So, Ian, you've got a topic on the ports. So, should it be enough for a port to work as well as its console counterparts?
Yeah, well, I've been playing Prototype 2 was very cheap on Amazon.com, actually, but I'm able to buy, you know, digital games off Amazon.com. So it was very cheap. It was like less than £5 for both the first and the second. And I loved the second. Well, love's strong, but I enjoyed the first game for what it was. You know, it's the plot wasn't great, etc., etc., but it's just fun. So I thought I'm gonna pick up the second, even though I'd heard it was a pretty poor port. Having played it, I've actually completed it earlier today. It is a notably poor port, but the main thing that stands out is the textures and stuff look much like they would on the Xbox, rather than being, you know, of a better quality, because my machine can run graphics at a much higher level than, like, what, 7-year-old consoles now or something?
Right.
Eight years, wow. So I was sort of, oh, yeah, it is, you know, it's quite, I see why people moan about it being a bad port, it does. And then I just thought, but why is that such a big issue to me? Like, I'd probably quite happily play it on the Xbox and think, you know, I'm not one for graphics particularly. I'm much more about gameplay and other elements. Graphics are very much secondary. But it does bother me when a port has made no effort to even just, like, upscale the graphics for the PC. And I just wondered what you think about it. Is if it runs as smoothly, which Prototype 2 doesn't for a lot of people, by the way. A lot of people just cannot play it at all because it's
right.
A disaster. But if it runs as smoothly as it would on the console, is that enough for you in a PC port of a game? Or do you want, you know, the different resolution, you know, the vast array of options that PC games should, in my opinion, have?
It's funny you bring this up because I've been talking about this for a while lately with some people I know. And it's tricky because we as PC gamers, this is going to be a generalization. So, I mean, this does not mean you or me or any, you know, just, but PC gamers in general want stuff that controls perfectly, obviously, looks significantly better, and they want it $10 cheaper than the same thing for the console. Now, I don't think that those are necessarily out of line. I mean, I think if it works as smoothly as it does on the console, I think you still kind of expect an optimized PC performance because that's why you're playing it on a PC rather than the Xbox. You have access to those higher resolutions and, you know, just and better customization options, modding, all of that stuff. So if it runs just as well, I think I'm okay with that, but I usually purchase things on PC specifically because I know it will look better. All other things being equal, as long as the gameplay and so on and so forth. But this is cool that you bring this up because it kind of leads into the other topic I wanted to talk about ports. Would we be less upset with developers if instead of just saying the reason we make shoddy ports is because you people are going to pirate them anyway and it's not worth it, That pisses us off when they say that, correct? About the, that it's piracy and only piracy that's the issue.
Yeah.
All right. So if Ubisoft or whomever said, look, piracy eats into our profits, definitely, and that is a problem, and we do need to work on that. But one of the other things that is never spoken about is there are no standards for PC. So if we're going to test a game, we need to test it on 3 or 4 different operating systems. Mac, Linux, I know Linux is not an operating system, not getting into that whole thing. PC, plus however many types of video cards, plus however many types of sound cards, plus people want to use controllers from 8-10 years ago, various monitors, various motherboards, various types of RAM. There are just so many infinite, there's an infinite number of configurations that are conceivable for a PC, and all gamers expect everything to work all the time. We see that, we see issues, again, we'll bring up Spider-Man since I just finished that. Most PC gamers, well, I don't even know if most, PC gamers on the Steam forums mentioned that they were having major graphical slowdowns, this, that, and the other thing, and some of it can probably be attributed to people don't know how to configure systems properly, and some people build systems better than things that are store-bought and so on and so forth. But are we expecting too much from developers that, hey, you need to configure this so it works on every possible PC, where with a console, really, there's only a couple types. It works or it doesn't for the most part. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I think that's a major factor to why a lot of PC ports are just sort of hashed over from the Xbox version, because it does the testing to make it, you know, make sure it does run really smoothly on every system, like you say, all the different configurations you can have. It must be, like, the cost must be ridiculous, and you're never going to test everything that someone's going to try and run it on. Like, you just right. can't do it. But again, I think the transparency in general would be good. Like, mm-hmm. if a developer was just phoning in a PC port, they were just like, look, it's a shameless port. It's not going to have any of the options. You're not going to be able to change your FOV. You're not going to be able to do any of the things we know you like. We apologize. We just can't do it. You know, we just physically cannot do it. We don't have the money for it. We don't think the market's there, blah, blah, blah. I'd be a lot more receptive to that. But they tend to be very vague. It's just like, oh, yeah, it's coming to the PC. It's like, will it be a good version? And just like, oh, it's coming. Oh, yeah, it's, you'll know when it's there. It'll be about 3 months later, but you'll know.
Right.
And it just, that's when people get annoyed.
But well, they get also, annoyed, too, with that, and then just that things don't work. I mean, forget the optimize, but like Ghost Recon didn't work in certain resolutions. But go on.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's stuff like that. But I can see, like, there's a lot of issues with it, because recently Sleeping Dogs, which by everyone's account, I haven't played it myself, but by everyone's account was a very well done port. Like, a lot of care and attention went into the PC version of the game. The game itself is apparently a really good game. It just has not sold on PC. So the developers who are investing the time into making these things aren't seeing a return, at least in that example. I know Borderlands 2 has done, you know, well out of it, but Sleeping Dogs has probably scarred them for a bit now. They'll be, you know, a lot more hesitant to put the time and the money into the PC port, because we didn't support it at the end of the day. We didn't support it being a great port as much as we detract from something that's a bad port.
Yeah, it is really strange. I mean, sometimes it leads to a vicious cycle. I said, someone like an Ubisoft, you pirate 95% of our titles anyway, so we're going to release this slipshod port. And then we say, well, that's why I'm not condoning piracy. But people come out and say, well, if you're not going to put any effort in, we're not going to support you financially, which then leads to, well, we don't have the money to make a good port because you people are going to pirate it anyway, and so on and so forth. And the DRM gets more out of control. In fact, again, we were talking before the show started about Rocksmith and how I'm considering picking up the PC version of that. And some people say that the cable that they use to let you plug an electric guitar into your USB port is kind of a DRM, because there are better types of that connector available commercially. But Ubisoft is demanding that you use this Pure Tone or whatever, Shore Tone, whatever the thing is called, cable, and people are likening it to a DRM. So that kind of thing doesn't help either. And the fact that, again, it's this shoddy stuff that's, well, you know, we made this game so it's to teach people how to play guitar, but we're not going to support headphones, wireless or USB or wireless headsets. What? And it's they make some bizarre decisions too. I wish there were, like you said, there were more transparency. Look, trying to do these, it's the USB. It puts interrupts in the system. We don't know how to counteract that. But just come forward and say it. They put a nebulous warning in there. It's like some people with headsets might need to exercise more care when using them. Otherwise, there might be a loss of sound fidelity. Just say, hey, we didn't test this crap, and we don't have the time.
Well, you know, I've been sitting here kind of remaining quiet on this whole port thing because I thought we already had this conversation. I really did. Because we talked about this, if I'm not mistaken, back when Borderlands 1 was ported over to the PC. You know, and how Borderlands 1 didn't give all the options that a PC game would, and how there was, you know, emo rage and stuff like that about it. And then, you know, Borderlands 2 comes out and all those options are there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and we also have this debate when it comes up that a PC game is ported to the console, a la Portal and Portal 2. And it's just, I don't know, companies are going to do what companies do, and that's just the easiest way to look at it. Does it suck that they're going to port a title such as Sleeping Dogs or, you know, Prototype 2 over to PC and not do anything with it? Yeah, it does, especially those of us that have really nice PCs. But, you know, originally, I don't even think they were even thinking about, you know, oh, let's put this onto PC. You know, it's just my idea. I don't know.
So you don't think they'd want to make extra money by putting it on? I get that.
It's not the extra money bit. It's not
so much work on it. It's like we were saying, just be on, if they were to come out and say, look, the reason we're not doing this is because there are too many configurations. We can't get this to work. And hey, you're taking your chances if you pick it up. Obviously, that's not the best PR campaign, but I think it would be better than just saying, here it is, and then, oh, well, this doesn't work. Oh, yes, we're going to address that in a patch. Well, then you knew something was wrong when you started. So there's fault to go around. I just think, would it be better if there were a little bit more honesty and a little more openness in their technical support forums and in the like with Ubisoft, you it almost seems like whenever or in Cyanide too, Cyanide/Focus, there are problems with their game. And, oh yes, there's going to be a patch, and then the patch just never comes out or it never fixes what they said it was going to fix, and that leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. So why intentionally anger people by promising things that you're not going to do? Just come out and say, look, we can't do this for this, 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 and this. That's how it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think patches are a bit different because they usually do crop up because someone's got a configuration that even if they've tested extensively, they're like, oh, we didn't have that. And then they're like, oh, we're working on a fix. And it takes them a while to sort of troubleshoot the issue and stuff. So I'm not too bad about post-release patches on the PC because it isn't a closed system, so it is ridiculously hard to test. But yeah, like we've said, just let us know how much. Not only if you're putting a lot of effort in, I want developers who aren't putting a lot of effort in to the ports, just to let me know. Just say, look, it'll be about as good, maybe slightly better, maybe slightly worse than the console counterpart. So pick it up on whatever platform you prefer. And I'm much more likely to assess it and think, actually, I like the promise of the game. The graphics don't bother me. If I have to use an Xbox 360 pad or, you know, whatever you want to use, because it don't work properly with a keyboard and mouse, that's fine. And it might have actually, like, I bought Prototype 2 because it was cheap, and I'm glad I did because I've enjoyed it. But if it would have said anywhere, Ian, you will have to unplug your printer for this to work, I would have picked it up straight away. Right. Because that is a novel game experience. That's bringing it out of the fiction and into my reality.
Meta.
It's brilliant. It took me ages to work out what it was that was affecting the game, and that was it. Just for no reason, just unplug your printer and you're golden.
Wow.
So the other side of this, well, I don't even know the other side of it, but anyway, another part of this is it's always funny, I think, when new consoles come out, how people react to price for things. So I don't know whether this is a function of the age of the consumer or the age of the parents of the consumer. But for instance, you know, when the Super Nintendo first came out, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up. And so the first thing was my folks said, well, we're not going to get this for you right now because it's expensive. And you already have all this other money tied up in Nintendo games, and now you can't play them anymore. So the backwards compatibility thing was definitely an issue. But it seems like for some things, people get really upset about that. Like, I'm wondering if that's going to affect Wii U sales, because we parents who got their young kids a Wii are going to say, what am I going to get them this thing for? They already have this and all those other games. But with PC stuff, it seems like sometimes gamers get mad when it pushes new hardware, but sometimes it doesn't. Like when a new Wing Commander game used to come out, I think we've talked about this before a little bit, you know, it used sound cards. My God, you have to go get a sound card. But when Borderlands 2 came out, people were like, well, it's cell shaded. I shouldn't have to go buy new hardware to run this at the highest resolution. Why? Why is it for some games will eat the cost of something and say, well, you know, hardware, you know, entertainment moves on, hardware moves on. But for other things, people get really offended by, well, what do you mean I have to buy new hardware for this? I'm trying to figure out that disconnect.
Haters gonna hate.
Oh, okay. Well, that was
easy. I'm sorry. That's like the easiest way to describe that, because you're gonna have people that are gonna be like, yeah, no, that's fine, not a problem. And other people are gonna be like, no. And by the way, for those people that are sitting there going, it's only cell shaded, you should turn on the physics.
No, right.
Really, turn on the physics, because stuff gets real when you turn on the physics. Sorry, I didn't realize I was playing Borderlands 2 without the physics engine turned on. And then when I turned it on, I actually had to go and start the game over again just to see it, because it was gorgeous.
It is. Oh, it definitely is.
That's why you have to buy new hardware for a cel-shaded game. Because it brings in a lot of particle effects. A lot of particle effects.
But like I said, I do wonder. I said I'm not bashing the Wii U right now, because I've done that more than enough. But I wonder if their sales are going to not be what they're hoping, because you're going to get a lot of people going,
no,
I don't see what the purpose is. We already bought you one of these, kind of thing.
No, it's a holiday. It's a new toy. It's got a different gadget thing to it. The hardcore gamers are going to give it a shot. The non-hardcore gamers are going to give it a shot, because people are going to be like, oh, look. And by the way, what is it? $250? $350?
I don't know, actually.
Let me look it up here really quick. Good show. Looking up the price of the Wii U as we record.
Well, you come back to that while we move on to our next topic.
Yeah.
$350. Which a new Wii was what, $250?
Something like that.
Okay.
So back to the idea of quote-unquote games journalism. So the first thing I have, there's an article here at GameRanks.com, RANX, because the, you know, X is extreme, I guess. And it's the article is Hitman Absolution is, quote, a mess and gets torn apart in a PC Gamer review. So the whole article, and Ian, I know you read it, so you can back me up on this. And you read it too. Okay. The whole article is posting snippets of the PC Gamer review, which this site is not, and then saying, wow, see, if you wanted this, you might be disappointed, because here, look at what this person had to say. That really kind of infuriated me for a number of reasons. So I want to see what you guys have to say about it before I go off on yet another tangent.
Yeah, well, I might somewhat beat you to it, because that, to me, when I read it, you know, you linked it, I thought, oh, what's this about Hitman? Because a while ago, I think on the show, I expressed my own concerns that this, right, you know, some of this seems to back up. So I was like, oh, it might be quite interesting. But this, to me, is not a news article of any merit. It's this guy's opinion says this game's bad. Here's a news article. I don't understand how this... I never understand when websites post blah, blah, gave blah, blah, 90. Like, that's not news. It really annoys me. And it's done so well on, like, you know, it's just got loads of comments, it's got loads of people talking about it, and it just perpetuates this, like, really shoddy,
and
shoddy.
And it's weird because, again, I think it's because the fanboys pro and against are so get so wound up. But a lot of times, even on N4G, articles like this get ripped apart for that, why are you posting this? Somebody else's review. You didn't even add anything to it. You quoted it and put up one sentence of not even opinion, just saying, here's somebody else talking about this. So it's just, I don't quite understand this. And I'm not, obviously it's a little bit sour grapes because we've certainly never had an article hit 900 degrees on N4G with, you know, hundreds of comments, but I just, again, yes, we're not journalists. I mean, we've talked about this before anyway, but that just seems particularly irresponsible and just trolling for hits rather than trying to actually accomplish something or tell somebody something new.
Yeah, I mean, it's under the veil of if it's on your, you know, if you've got it pre-ordered, if it's on your Christmas wish list, maybe you want to reconsider. Because it's a Christmas issue of PC Gamer. So I think there's a bit of, you know, we're letting you know so you can, like, not make this error. But no one is going to hear secondhand that Tom Francis of PC Gamer has said that it's an absolute mess and cancel pre-order.
No.
I can't imagine anyone taking a quote from a review that isn't officially out yet, the magazine isn't out yet, it's a score of 62. Which, and I suppose the scoring system's messed up, one of the reasons we don't use one. But 62, right, to me, is not an absolute mess.
No.
Oh, well, a mess. 62 is like, it's better than your average game. And if you like Hitman, you'll probably like it because it's got the same themes, etc.
Right. So, building from that, I said that just struck me as... I don't want to say irresponsible, because again, that makes it sound like we have some sort of, that we're far more noble than we are. We're talking about video games, but
we've worked out that you'd sell yourself for anyone who had a bit of money. So yeah, certainly not coming from the noble aspect.
Exactly. I'm certainly not going to try. Yeah, I'm not going to. But once again, I know we've talked about it before, and you just mentioned again why we don't use review scores, because again, we've said they're nebulous, this, that, and the other thing. What if we made those numbers actually mean something?
Okay.
So, I was thinking about this the other day. So, instead of giving it a 5 out of 6, I actually saw one group do that, 5 out of 6, or a 7.253 out of 10, because I've seen a lot of those, too, where they use a lot of decimal points, and I always think that's kind of funny, too, for a subjective score that you add decimal points to. What if you just had kind of sort of what we do, not just on a buy, rent, try out kind of thing. What if you rated it on, is it worth the actual price? I would pay $40 for this. I would pay $60. I would pay full $60 for this. And the reason I say this is, one, it would give you, I think it would be a little bit stronger recommendation or stronger removal of, or stronger recommendation to avoid if you're saying, you know, $30 for King's Bounty seems reasonable because, and like I said that in my review, $30 seems reasonable for the amount of stuff. However, because of this, this, and this, you might not feel justified paying $30 for it. So that's one part of it. And secondly, I think it would help smooth out the other problem I've always had with reviews, that rating Angry Birds Star Wars 5 out of 5 does not mean anywhere near the same thing as saying Halo 4 is a 5 out of 5. And I've seen those that number, I think, for both of those. But if you were to say, man, Halo 4 is absolutely worth every dollar of the $60 price tag, or you say, man, Angry Birds for $5 on a PC seems like a really good deal. You're kind of giving that number more of a context about it, because you're equating it to a purchase. But if you were to say, yeah, Angry Birds for $5, that's pretty high. If you're going to get it for Android, because it's a buck, or actually Android, it's free. But, you know, if you're going to do it, wait for a sale, this, that, the other thing, or like I've even done it with Steam reviews, you know, wait for this one to be 75% off on Steam because X, Y, and Z. I know we would never get to this as a standard, but is it something even worth trying to shoot for?
It's an interesting idea because it adds a timeless quality to your review as well, because I often worry if I bring price into it. I don't always, but if I mention the price, I'm like, when this is £5, my review's, you know, a lot less relevant, because I'm saying, right, like, oh, it's decent at £20 or whatever, and that's like, but what does that mean if it's £5 off? Does that mean it's a definite, you know? So it does have some merit, but price is just, like, people put such a different emphasis on money. I think it'd be tough to get, like, it'd just mean a different thing to every different person, wouldn't it? Like, you might think, oh, for £5, it's worth it, because £5's absolutely nothing. Whereas someone else would be like, oh, £5 is my gaming budget for the month. Do I want it to go on this? Maybe not £5, but...
Right, I know what you're saying.
So it has got, you know, an issue with that, I think. But no, it's interesting.
Isn't it more of a tangible thing, though? Because like you said, yeah, different, that number has different meanings to different people, but 5 out of 5 means different things to different people, we've decided. Because there are people who don't think that 5 out of 5 means it is an absolutely flawless game. It is just the best time I've had on it. So it can have all kinds of bugs, you know, things, whatever, but it's still, it's a 10 out of 10. And you see that on Metacritic all the time. Well, people are giving this a 7, so I'm going to give it a 10 to balance it out. But those numbers all become meaningless.
Yeah, so I honestly think we should stop striving for a universal score system. Like, I know, like, a 7.2 is the same as 72%, like, you know, and that you can work, and it can all add up nice, and you get your Metacritic score and your averages and stuff. But I think individual sites should come up with a strict review guideline that is actually just theirs. Like Beefjack at the moment, they've done away with scores, and they've got like, this is a rainy day game. You know, it's not, you know, it's
right,
it's not one to pick up immediately, but, you know, if you fancy it. So, and they've got, but it's clear, you see a thing and you're like, oh, so that means Destructoid do it with numbers, but they've got descriptions for the numbers saying, you know, not a flawless game, but so you know that 8 means that to that reviewer.
Right.
The problem is when you extrapolate that to try and fit in with other sites that operate on the ridiculous, you know, 70% is a rubbish game. It doesn't work. So I think we just need to accept you can't coerce every review into one and get an average score. You've got to just read them, which I know people hate doing, apparently. But just read the review, hopefully the website, either the review makes it very clear of the opinion, or there is, you know, if they want to help you out because your comprehension's not that good, they've got some sort of scoring system that clearly tells you how good it is in their opinion. And just don't extrapolate it to any other site. Just leave it. That's what their opinion was. I think that's the only way it's going to ever matter. Just get rid of it.
Well, I don't know if you were on the show a couple weeks ago when we talked about how it seems like IGN is trying – well, some people at IGN – it seems like Greg Miller at IGN was trying to revamp how they did numerical scores, and it almost seems like there was an editor rebellion because nobody else seemed to go along with it. He reviewed – I think it was Greg – reviewed Retro City Rampage, Luke's new favorite game, and he gave it a 5 out of 10. But in the review – he said, it's an average title, it's this, it's fairly entertaining, and people are like, oh, it's 5 out of 10, it's terrible, and he wrote a bunch of times, no, 5 out of 10 is average. And I'm like, but...
The issue...
You've never said that before, so now suddenly they're trying to right size, whatever they're scoring, because, as you said, Ian, anything that was below a 70 was rubbish. So it's...
It has more to do with, you know, school grading policies and things like that. I hate to say it, but when we look at it, we're not looking at it as in a score based on a scale from 1 to 10.
Right.
You know, 1 being horrible, 10 being beautiful. Where does it fit? And then realizing, oh, 5's average. Five's average. It's the middle of the road. No, we're so hung up on the way school runs and the way schools are that, oh my God, anything below 65 is failing. That's not average. Average is about a 70.
No. Right.
Average is a 70 when you're in school, folks. Now, last I checked, most of us gamers that aren't going to school don't have to worry about that anymore. You know? It's not, oh, the game passes or fails. It's not like the game is going out to get a diploma, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking nonsense here, but...
I think the problem is people, fans, journalists, quote-unquote journalists, nobody has a clear idea of what a review should be. There's no, you know, etiquette guide. There, I was reading a thing today, and people were complaining. I think it was even in the Hitman Absolution review, and somebody's like, well... You can't compare this game to previous games. And somebody else is like, yeah, review everything in a vacuum, because if something else does it better, ignore it. I'm sure that'll be objective. So it seems like people don't know what they want a review to say. Journalists don't know what a review should say. People don't know whether it should be an opinion. Some people are like, well, you can't really give it. All you should talk about are the technical things. Well, yes, but a review is still an opinion. Because one person's like, you shouldn't say whether you like something or didn't like it. Like, but what? So I don't know.
This is what annoys me about it. Like, there's so many websites. I mean, take us for example. I'd like to think people who come back and regularly read our reviews find that they get something from our take on what a review should be. We've all got slightly different, you know, views on. We all write slightly differently.
Right.
And we all approach reviews in a different manner. So I'd like to think some people out there have read, you know, each of our stuff and gone, oh, that informs me, that helps me make a decision. I like that review, I'll come back to this site.
Mm-hmm.
Just view stuff in isolation. Find an outlet that you like, because there's so many. You can, like, I ignore a lot of popular websites, because I just don't. It just doesn't help me make a decision on a game, for whatever reason. But there's people who love to use them, and get something out of it. So just, we don't need any standard across the board or anything. Every writer, interpret what a review should be in their own way. Write that review. If people flock to it, then that's good. If people don't, obviously it's a niche review, but that also has its use. I don't see why it needs to be this whole, you know, standard across the board.
I think just because people get so panicked about those numbers, again, you're usually when you're trying to find a review, at least when I was trying to find reviews when I used to read them, it's harder for me now to read them because if it's something I'm especially working on, I don't want to read it. But I always kind of tried to find one that had basically the same opinion. I mean, I looked for the best and the worst, and I also was trying to find one that had – that read similarly to how I was feeling about that thing, that game going into it. So yeah, I usually read more than one, but I think because of the Metacritic scores, people again feel like they need to justify their purchase online. So, hey, I like WWE 13. I'm enjoying it. Luke's made fun of me. Jason made fun of me. Jen has made fun of me. Okay.
I am thinking of making fun of you.
I'm sure you will. So, and that's fine. So, you know, but that's the kind of thing. So if I go by reviews and I read a bunch that say 5 out of 10, it's the worst thing ever. And I read a bunch that say, you know, 9 out of 10, it's the greatest thing ever. It's kind of one of those, well, you bring a good review as like a defense for something that you like. Like I pick on Luke all the time for the Dynasty Warrior games. I don't prefer them, but there's nothing wrong with Luke that some therapy can't cure, but the fact that he enjoys the Dynasty Warrior games.
I knew that was coming.
Of course it was. But no, seriously, you enjoy that type of game. I don't, but that doesn't make, you know, if somebody gives it a 4 out of 10, I hate this type of game. Well, okay, then you shouldn't be reviewing it either. The whole thing has always been kind of confusing to me. And I know we've talked about it before, and I, like you said, Ian, I agree with you that there doesn't, probably shouldn't be a... This is how everyone must review, but since so much emphasis is placed on those scores for Metacritic, and because it helps with marketing, it helps with whether their sales. It's I don't know how you handle it.
Yeah, well, I think we'll just have to see what happened. Like, I think there is a lot of people now that Metacritic is deciding bonuses for developer, like, just it's got so much power.
Right.
There is a lot of people. There are a lot of people going against it now. Even people who initially thought it was a good idea are going, I'm against the whole averaging out a score and it having that much power, because it can affect the industry in a way that's ridiculous. And, you know, it will eventually, I sort of assume, die out. Or, you know, its effect will be minimised and something else will come along that dictates people's tastes. And it's always going to be in flux. So you just need to write what you want to write, how you want to write it. Hopefully you'll find an audience, even if it is somewhat niche. And just, that's it. There's nothing you can do about the general populace wanting some arbitrary number to make their opinion seem right.
To validate them, yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
There's nothing you can do about it. So there's always going to be something that people use to validate their opinion, which is ridiculous in many ways because it's a subjective, you know, it's an art form at the end of the day, so it's very subjective. So nothing's factual. There's nothing factual about it.
That's kind of the whole purpose. That's true. It's a very good point. Well, anyway, guys, I think we have beaten all of these topics sufficiently into the ground in a much more classy way because Ian was here this week.
Nice.
But without some of the sexy voice, apparently, because Dave was not here this week.
Yeah, the self-proclaimed sexy voice of Just Press Start.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I just felt like doing that.
Okay, no, please don't.
No. I was just trying, you know, maybe get a little love for Dave in there.
Maybe that works for you, but that's, yeah.
You can keep your love for Dave to yourself. I don't think it's appropriate in a public.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, of course, but.
No, you know, your wife might be a bit confused by it, but.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
Anyway. This has been episode 109 of Just Press Start. If you like what you heard, and by God, why wouldn't you? Come back next week for episode 110 and so on and so forth in a sequential fashion. We're at www.justpressstart.net, and we can be reached and viewed and seen in a whole bunch of other ways. Take it away, Luke.
No, I'm kidding. You can find us on Twitter at JTPS Game Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at /JustPressStart, I believe. Or is it JPS Game Podcast? Just Press Start. Just look for us. We're there on Facebook. We're somewhere on Google Plus hiding. It's kind of hard to find, so I've just kind of given up talking about it.
Stealthy.
And we're also on YouTube at JPS Game Podcast. We're also on Twitch TV at JPS Game Podcast. So, yeah. Try to keep things easy. Twitter account is at JPS Game Podcast. Everything else is going to try to be at JPS Game Podcast, just to make life easier. Which, if you do go over to our Twitch TV page, we actually have a few things up there. We do have a few things on our YouTube page. We're working on more Let's Plays. They're coming, folks. It's just taking us a little bit longer because, well, it's the holiday season, and we are getting jammed with all the holiday releases. So, you know how it is.
All right, so there you have it for Ian and for Luke.
Nice, he's going back to my old name.
I almost did for a second, you know, because it still comes up on the Skype thing, and I happened to look over, and it threw me off. But anyway, from all of us here, thank you so much for listening. Come back next week. Check out the site. Go read stuff. Tell us about what you think about our reviews and stuff, and we'll talk to you next week.
Laters.
See ya.